What if you had the resources you needed for your mental health right at your fingertips? Imagine a world where our mental well-being is prioritized just like our physical health, and where we have access to the tools and support we need. That's exactly what the Make Mental Health Matter show is all about. Join Kelly Melissa Reinhart, a true warrior for mental health, founder of Make Mental Health Matter nonprofit, author, and wellness coach. This show is your gateway to breaking down the stigma surrounding mental health. Tune in for enlightening conversations, expert insights, and empowering stories that will not only increase awareness, but also provide education about mental health. It's time to have those hard conversations, prioritize your well-being, and make your mental health matter. Your mental wellness journey starts here.
Welcome to another episode of Make Mental Health Matter. My name is Kelly Melissa Reinhart. I am your host. So if this happens to be the first time that you are watching, thank you for being here. And if this is your second, third, fourth, fifth, I don't know, millionth time watching, we haven't had a million episodes, but thank you for coming back. I bring on guests who are either professionals in the mental health space, advocates of mental health, or those with lived experience. And if you've been watching this for quite some time, you probably started to see that most people, if they are in the professional space or they are advocates, they have a story behind why they do what they do. And we all go through this life. It is a journey with lots of different turns and twists. And sometimes I call it a roller coaster of life. We lose people, we lose identities, maybe we don't become what we thought we were going to be, and we have this opportunity to make an impact on people's lives and do something that's really, truly meaningful in our lives to be able to help others. And I am excited for my guest today because he does just that. He has a story, but he also does meaningful work helping other people, athletes more specifically, but you'll learn more about him in a moment. So I think that his journey and his story is incredible, hence the reason I'm bringing him on the show. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about him first, and then we'll bring him up. So Brandon owns Soma Performance and Fitness in Centennial, Colorado, where he and his team of coaches help youth athletes improve speed, strength, and confidence, as well as active adults improve overall health and fitness. So let me bring up my guest. Brandon, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here for sure.
Yay. So I know that you, well, I just told a little bit about your bio, but share with the audience a little bit more about you and what you do specifically.
Yeah. So I founded Soma Performance Fitness back in 2020. I've worked with youth athletes since about 2010. I'm from the East Coast originally, so I'm originally from Connecticut. I went to school out there. I did some work coaching high school basketball level and working with athletes there. And then my wife and I moved to Colorado in 2014. I started working at a small sports performance place. I love working with youth athletes, and that's kind of tied into the story and the things that I'll talk about today. But I left that place at about a year and a half, started my own business with a business partner, and ran that until 2020, where we closed that business. Amongst other reasons, I'm sure you can think of at least one factor that played into that. But so we closed that business down, and I started Soma, and I've been doing that since 2020. So yeah, we work with youth athletes mainly. We are a fitness business as well, so we do work with adult and general population clients of all ages. But our niche is definitely in helping young athletes improve their performance. And like you said, a lot of that comes from helping them with developing speed and power, strength. And then the big thing for us is improving confidence. So helping these young athletes feel a lot more confident in their abilities so that they can go out and play their sports at a high level.
Amazing. And I know when you and I talked, because I love that you also said confidence, right? Because most times it's really, that's the biggest part, it's not necessarily like the strength and the speed, but it's getting the confidence to have the strength and the speed. And I love that you work with youth in that space. And I know that you work in all different types of space because athletes, not all, but some of them have other challenges that arise as they continue their journey being an athlete, whether it's from really, really young, going into adulthood, not just physical, but mental challenges that come up too.
Yeah, absolutely. And to speak just briefly about the confidence, as you mentioned, you know, one of the things that we tell our athletes is, you know, if you take two people who have the same exact physical ability and skill level, and one is more confident than the other, that person will always outperform the other person just because they have more belief in themselves. So that's something that we really try to get across early. And as they start to see themselves developing and getting better, they start to feel that confidence and lean into that a little bit more. And maybe because we talk about it a lot, but they kind of lean into it a little bit more, which is good. And then we hear, you know, those positive reports from them and their parents or other spectators as well. But yeah, I mean, another area, I've been fortunate since, I think about 2016, so 8 years now, I've been fortunate to have a relationship with an eating disorder center here in Denver. I work very closely with them as part of an athlete edge program, it's called, where basically anytime they get high level athletes into their recovery program, we look to integrate a training aspect into their recovery. There's a number of different factors that play into why that's so important, but you know, some of which, even at the most simple level, are athletes are a lot less likely to try to rush their way through their program and through recovery if they're allowed to have some sort of a training aspect attached to their recovery plan. So that's helpful. But one of our main goals when we're working with these athletes is to restore a healthy relationship with exercise. So a lot of times, athletes who are struggling with eating disorders or even other mental health disorders can start to have a really distorted relationship with exercise, and they do it in a way that's more harmful than helpful. So our goal is always to help not only educate them, but help them feel like they're building a much stronger connection through the mind-body connection of how they should be training and then how they should be recovering and why those things are important. So, you know, it's been really rewarding work, working with people who are actively, and you can tell they're working hard on the psychological and mental aspect of their recovery. And then being able to kind of work side by side with them to help them through that physical aspect too, and kind of bring that whole picture together. So that way, when they leave and go back to their competitive teams or competitive environment, whatever that looks like, they just feel a lot more prepared and in a much healthier place when it comes to how they approach their training.
Yeah. So a couple of things that popped into my head. First question is how, because it's generally parents most likely that probably reach out to you and they're like, hey, my kid needs help with speed or with endurance or whatever it might be, right? And then you kind of get in there and you find maybe it's a little bit more lack of confidence, or maybe there's some fear that might be coming up, or maybe there's another physical or mental health challenge that you're finding as you start to work with the youth. And then in addition to that, being able to have the side that you're helping with eating disorders, which my understanding is that it's actually more common with athletes than we talk about. So the question, I'm like, where's the question? The question that I have, first one is, what are the things that parents are mainly coming to you for specifically? And then I'll ask my follow-up question.
Sure. Yeah. And to be clear, most of our you know, eating disorder type athletes who are recovering come directly from our relationship with that specific eating disorder center or relationships we've built with other therapists who are outpatient therapists. So that is usually how we'll start to interact with them, you know, outside of them specifically being in a recovery program at the center. But when it comes to our athletes who come to see us just in general, a lot of the business we do, thankfully, which is nice, is referral based, right? So a lot of families are talking to other families and, you know, asking them, hey, what are you doing for this? And they're like, oh, we work with this person, and they'll connect us. But when they come in, I mean, parents who you can usually tell. So parents who parent highly competitive athletes are usually a certain type of parent themselves, and they're not afraid to just call things out, right? So we'll sit down and they'll talk through right in front of the kid, like, hey, this is what we're seeing. I usually try to really focus those things on the kid. So we always bring our prospective clients in for a free consultation and assessment. And I really try to get the kids talking, because I want to know that it's something that they want and that they need. And it's not just something their parents are making them do. But when they come to us, a lot of the things we hear are very, very similar. I want to get faster. I want to get stronger. And I'll usually ask them, you know, where do you see that lack of speed or lack of strength happening in your sport? Give me like situational examples of, you know, how that directly affects you when you play. And that's one for information for me, but also to make that mental connection, right? I want them to really feel like, okay, yeah, these are specific moments that I feel like I'm not quite as capable as I want to be. And we've had anywhere along the spectrum of athletes who are already pretty confident coming in, but just know that I need to get a little bit stronger or I need to get a little bit faster. And then athletes on the complete other side of the spectrum who you can almost tell when you're talking to them, like they're like, they won't even almost make eye contact. They just are not confident at all in themselves. They're almost afraid to talk about some of these things. And so, yeah, we kind of seen it anywhere along, but I will say those athletes who come in probably the most timid start to feel those gains in confidence the fastest, because sometimes it's almost just a result of them knowing that they're working with a professional coach, that they're like, yeah, like I'm doing the next level. I'm doing what the best athletes are doing. So they already start to feel better, which it's kind of funny because they'll start to see their performance improve almost right away too, where we haven't really done a whole lot. And I'll usually tell those people like, these results are not always guaranteed. So don't go tell people like 1 week in, you're already like playing better and stuff. But yeah, so we usually see very, very similar requests, and it's mostly around those physical aspects. And then that confidence piece will come in to play as well sometimes.
Yeah, it's probably, I mean, I know with my son is only 8, almost 9, but still talking about like he plays soccer and we've played probably every sport you can imagine. And I'm like, kid, you got to pick one because we can't do all of them. But thinking about being on the sideline, right, as a parent, and we're still in rec, we're not in club. And you, at least last season, we watched and they lost every single game other than one. And that's hard. I mean, that's just hard on, I know they're like, it's just for fun, but there is that level of competition. And probably like what you see too, is the parents have a certain expectation of where their kids should be at. And maybe they're not there yet, or they're maybe not getting the support, I guess you could say, from the coach. And then once they come to you, like that's just an extra layer of support. And they're like, oh, wow, like Brandon actually knows what he's doing. And it's not my parent telling me what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be funny how often we hear that. Like, I try to tell them, but they won't listen to me. So I need someone else to tell them type of thing. But yeah, it's funny, too, that you bring up coaches, because sometimes it's a direct relationship directly because of something that a coach has said. Sometimes they'll get like assessments or feedback from the coaches and it'll say, hey, you need to get a little bit stronger here or a little faster here. And they'll bring those reports to me and be like, hey, we need to work on these things. So yeah, we can kind of see all those different things come into play for sure. But yeah, I mean, when you're paying for your kid to play competitive sports, it can start to be like, well, if you're serious about this, I'm willing to invest in it, but you need to be willing to do what it takes to kind of for not just sit on the bench and travel all over the country to watch, you know, type of thing.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it is. And knowing like my family has, my nephew actually played hockey for years and years and years, and they're a travel team, right? They travel, and it's a lot of money. And you're just like, you don't want to invest the time or the money if your kid's not really serious about it. But you also have to know when as a parent to kind of reserve and let the professionals step in versus us just thinking we know what we're talking about.
Yeah. No, it's so true. It's harder for some parents than others, because sometimes they were competitive athletes. So they really feel like, hey, I can help you. And the kids just don't want anything to do with their parents. I already say about my kids, like, I'm going to have probably one of the people that works for me train my kids, because they probably aren't going to want to hear it from me.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely one of those dynamics. And you work with what ages do you work with specifically?
Yeah, when it comes to athletes, we're usually in the 10 to 18 range. So 10 is probably our most common early starting age. We've had some younger athletes, but they have to have a certain level of maturity and also a certain level of desire and dedication. You know, usually those 6 to 10 year olds were just like, just go play, just go run around. It's not that there aren't things that we can do to help them, and we have. But again, it's usually for, you know, those athletes who are a little bit maybe more mature. A lot of times it's, we're training a sibling and they have a younger sibling, and we're like, okay, as long as they can come in and be able to handle, I don't want to say a regimented session, but a planned session, essentially, then we're good with it. But yeah, 10 to 18, and then we'll have kids who go off to college and play, and they'll come back and train over the breaks and summers and things like that.
Nice. I mean, it does mentally, when you think about your brain, right? I mean, the brain still isn't fully developed till 25 to 28, but it's still, even in that younger age, the maturation periods that they're going through, they can't take on that regimentation. And I see it, my son also does mixed martial arts, and I see it in those classes of like the younger, and he's kind of like right on that borderline of like being really good, or he gets highly distracted. We're like right on that border of, dude, you're going through for your black belt, like you've got to act like a black belt. But he's in a class with kind of younger kids because he's only 8. And then, so he gets highly distracted. And then there's other kids that are like super distracted, but watching how they regiment and kind of keep them a little bit more focused. So I can only imagine, I know that seeing the 10-year-olds there, they're much more like, they've got it together, right? So I see where the difference, just even a year or two, can make. It's amazing.
It's wild. Yeah, it's kind of crazy to think about, but yeah, it's very, very true. Yeah.
So the other question that had popped into my head, and talking about eating disorders, because this is something that I didn't fully understand until our family had an experience. And I also know that sometimes eating disorders are really about control. It's like controlling your environment, controlling what's happening in your life. Sometimes though, with youth, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but what I know about it is that it is sometimes a learned behavior. And is that something that you understand about, like, is it a learned behavior? Is it something that they really are trying to hold on to this control? Or what have you noticed around athletes and eating disorders?
Yeah, I think it can be a lot of different factors. Learned behavior for sure, but also environmental factors. I mean, if we just even look at sports and our society and how we place so much value on image and how people look, that plays a huge role in it. Now, I don't want to disregard the fact that eating disorders happen in the male populations as well, but it is predominantly in female athletic and general populations. And a lot of that comes around the types of uniforms you have to wear, right? I mean, tighter uniforms mean you're more revealed and you want to look better when you are that way, or you're wearing those types of things. So what you have to wear can play a big part in a young female feeling like, I need to be leaner and smaller. And that way I can look better, you know, when I'm playing. And it's unfortunate, but that does happen. And then the weight that our society puts on looking a certain way, right? And that weighs hard on young females. I mean, I'm not a young female, so I can't fully relate, but those adolescent years when you're trying to figure yourself out and you got a whole bunch of new hormones and emotions and things going on, right? Like you want to feel like you look attractive, and you, and that plays a big role. Other things that I've seen play a big role, just in my experience with working with athletes who have eating disorders, is you know, family related, trauma related. Sometimes it can be as simple as something a parent says that you really admire and look up to. So, you know, I can give a specific example. There was an athlete who had an older sibling who was also in the same sport, and a lot of these athletes are in endurance-based sports. It's not only endurance-based sports, but in general, endurance-based sports. And the dad had made a comment while the older sibling was hitting puberty age, like, "Oh, they're going to slow down now because they're going to put on some weight after they hit puberty and stuff like that." So this athlete, being very young, so the older sibling was hitting puberty, so this athlete was not there yet, right? So probably similar 8, maybe to 10, somewhere in that range, took it upon themselves to try to basically stop themselves from hitting puberty, right? So really harshly went into an eating disordered state. You could look at that person today and they still look like a 14-year-old in their early adulthood, right? Like very, very aggressive eating disorder habits based on being like, well, I don't want to gain that extra weight and then be slower, and then my dad's not going to think as highly of me, right? So that those types of factors can play a direct role in kind of starting those eating disorder habits. Definitely learned, definitely, parents who talk about food a certain way, right? And that's society in general, right? I mean, people are like, don't eat this or don't eat that or stay away from this or it'll make you fat or whatever. And, you know, those types of conversations just make people confused and make people think like, well, I got to stay away from this and stay away from that. And then they can start to obsess about, and exactly to your point, kind of that control aspect. They obsess about what they're eating to the point where they just start to control it. And kind of to piggyback that story about the young lady with the older sibling, a lot of times they feel like being smaller in their sport, especially in endurance-based sports, is going to help them be faster and perform better, right? So there is this aspect of they think it's helpful, right? And that's where the mental disorder really kicks in, and that eating disorder really plays a big role in a lot of their decision-making and how they approach their training, and in addition to their nutrition. I'm trying to think if there was any other – I know trauma in general, unrelated to food and unrelated to image and performance, can weigh heavily on all sorts of different mental health disorders, but eating disorders are no exception. I mean, they can be very closely related to that. I mean, we've seen athletes come in who don't have an extremely highly negative relationship with exercise, which it's not always interrelated. It's very, very common. But it's something else that has really triggered their disorder. And yeah, it's tough because I think there's so much misinformation and so much weight put on how people look and stuff like that, that it just, it's just hard, especially again, and this is in the male population too, because men want to look a certain way, but again, it's very much predominantly in the female populations. It just weighs on them, right? It just weighs on people to try to live up to certain expectations. And once the disorder starts, it just takes over and it just causes you to want to clamp down that control in so many different aspects and just kind of leads you in all these different directions. So.
Yeah. And so we're going to have to go to a quick sponsored break. But when we get back, I want to talk a little bit more about that. And then we're going to shift because I want to ask you another question too. So we'll be right back after this quick sponsored break.
It's time to make mental health matter. BCC bridges the gap by educating people to support those who are facing a mental health challenge. We aim to ACE, increase awareness, cultivate conversation, and provide education. To empower people and get educated and speak out about mental health and suicide so that we break down the stigma and start saving lives. Let's stop the stigma and normalize the conversation about mental health and suicide through educational classes and community events to reach 1 million people by 2030. And you can help. Go to bccevolution.org. Stay connected. Be a part of our community. Go to bccevolution.org now or email us support@bccevolution.org and make mental health matter.
What if you could transform your mental health journey with just one question? Have you ever wondered what it would be like to prioritize your mental well-being like never before? Well, now's your chance. Introducing Make Mental Health Matter, the show that's changing the conversation about mental wellness. Join us every Monday on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time as we delve into insightful discussions, expert advice, and inspiring stories. Hosted by Kelly Melissa Reinhardt, a warrior for mental health, this show is your guide to breaking down the stigma surrounding mental health and discovering valuable resources to enhance your well-being. So, are you ready to take charge of your mental health journey? Tune in and let's make mental health matter together.
Calling all authors. Have you been considering an audiobook? Well, look no further. Come take advantage of Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's unique in-house audiobook production, which includes benefits and bonuses from our radio station. Let our knowledgeable staff guide you to create the audiobook you've always dreamed of without breaking the bank. Check out our full one-stop service from A to Z, including the ACX process. Schedule a free consultation by calling 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to DreamVision7Radio.com.
Are you searching for a way to help create global change? Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's vision is to have an eclectic group of radio hosts dedicated to educating, enlightening, and helping humankind with positive messages and tools that enhance lives using different modalities and programs. If you would like to join our team and help illuminate the universe, call Deborah at 508-226-1723 or Deborah at DreamVision7Radio.com.
Make mental health matter. Support BCEvolution.org, a nonprofit organization in Aurora, Colorado, and assist by donating, volunteering, or shopping our merch. Either way helps us develop programs and events. Help us increase awareness, cultivate conversation, and provide education. Become a mental health warrior and find out why it matters. Go to BCEvolution.org now or email us support@BCEvolution.org and make mental health matter.
Edicia is a U.S. nonprofit dedicated to the dream of ending childhood malnutrition for millions of children around the world. Through the manufacture of Plumpy Nut and other nutrient-rich, peanut-based, ready-to-use foods, Edicia has already delivered life and hope to nearly 1 million children in over 26 developing countries. To find out how you can join Edicia's dream of ending childhood malnutrition, please visit ediciaglobal.org.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And like that, we're back. If you happen to be just joining us, thank you so much for watching. Brandon and I are chatting about specifically youth athletes and how he helps get them trained for better speed, better confidence, more endurance, whatever that looks like for the youth specifically. But we also started talking about eating disorders before the break and how a lot of it is a learned behavior. It also can be control-based, really trying to fit that mold that society puts you in as an athlete, and knowing that even the clothes that we wear, the words that we say, maybe as a parent or as a coach. It really, really weighs on youth in general. And that is something that I talk a lot about too, is the words that we use, right? The words that we use to ourselves and the words that we use to others is really important. And if we're saying things to ourselves that we would never, ever say to somebody to their face, why would we say that to ourselves? And in turn, as parents having youth athletes, we have to be aware of what we're saying to them, how we're talking about food, the relationship with food, what is good or bad for you, and finding the way to maybe possibly have more open conversations so that it's not, hey, don't eat this, don't eat that. Now you have to look this certain way or this certain way. Because I know, even growing up, I carry most of my weight in my stomach area, and that's how it's always been. Like, I have really, really skinny arms and legs, and it's been one of those things that I've been consciously aware of a good majority of my life. I also was a cheerleader at one point in time. And so you talking about what we wear, especially as females, it is like you notice the differences in that tight clothing, and you want to look maybe like this person or that person, and maybe your body isn't the same, or you want to be able to be as fast as or as good as whomever it might be. And so there are a lot of factors. And then youth, we were talking about earlier, the brain is not fully developed. So the rational part of the brain is not fully developed. So for them, those words that we're saying, possibly as parents, they're really going to absorb that information and take it to heart. It's not just like a fleeting moment that we say something. Like, it really truly impacts them to the core of, you know, these certain situations. So I love that you pointed all of those things out too. And I do want to, so just a little bit, the control aspect, because as athletes, their environments are pretty controlled. Like, if you think about a coach, the relationship with athletes, what they're trying to have them accomplish, it is a very controlled environment. And then you take this eating disorder that then they transfer that control maybe into working out or something of that nature. And I know you and I kind of had a conversation with that about that too, is how specifically do you help bring them to a place that they're not trying to control now with like working out or over committing, maybe is the word. I don't know. I know what you know what I'm saying.
Sure. Yeah. A lot of times when they have this really distorted relationship with training and exercise, they'll go above and beyond, right? So when they're recommended certain things through their training program, they'll do more outside of that. And that's when you start to see athletes overtraining and causing more harm than good, right? So there's a lot of negative effects of overtraining outside of just physical performance going down. Mental health goes kind of down with that as well. Mood changes, sleep changes, behavioral changes, all those things start to happen as a result of overtraining too, because you're not giving your body the time it needs to recover from the demand that you put on it through the training that you've already done. So one of the things that we really try to do early when we're working with athletes is there's a few different lines of thought here, because we're starting to integrate some new things into the program as well. But basically, we try to build a more solid internal measure of intensity. So how hard they're working at any given time, because in the past, they've gone with this feeling of, I need to be working as hard as I possibly can at all times, which is not the right way to train at all times. There are times when you do need to do that, and there are times when you need to dial it back and let your body get more of like an active recovery. So you're training, but you're training at a lower intensity so that your body can adapt and adjust to those imposed demands. So we operate off of what's called an RPE scale. So it's a rate of perceived effort or exhaustion. That last word is kind of interchangeable there, but that scale is basically a 1 to 10 scale, and 10 is the highest. You're basically at complete failure. And then 1 is I'm walking, right? So I'm working, but not really hard at all, right? So when they come in, we start them at a very middle of the road intensity and make them feel what it feels like to bring the intensity down and still train. So they're like, okay, I'm training, but I'm not training very hard. And so that process happens through the entire time that we see them, where they gradually start to increase that intensity based on a few factors. One, sometimes just a linear progression. But two, as long as they're maintaining the proper trajectory in their recovery program. If they start to fall back or they start to train outside of prescription, they get brought back down. And then we kind of gradually start to increase again, or we pause them at a certain point. So that's one aspect that really starts to challenge them because they're so used to working so hard all the time. And then we have an educational piece too, where once a week we kind of have a group where we talk more about educating them on specific things that generally athletes with eating disorders distort. So rest and recovery, in between sessions, during sessions, RPE scale, programming and periodization, making sure that you're not doing the same thing every day. Like you have some different aspects to your training program. And so we sit down and we educate them on those things. We field questions from them. Sometimes those sessions will be just all them asking questions and us answering them, which is what we want. We really want them challenging those old beliefs and those thoughts that eating disorder really put into their heads and started to build that deeper understanding, because they're doing so much work recovering that if we can start to ingrain some kind of new habits and new ways of thinking, when they go back to their teams, they're going to understand things a lot better, right? So when they're in a certain training program and they see, let's just take a runner, for instance, on Monday we have our long run of 13 miles, right? And then on Tuesday we have a recovery run of 6 miles. Well, the 6 mile run will not be at the same intensity as the 9 mile run. That's your long run. That's your hard push. That's your tough day. Your recovery run is going to be a lot less intense. So then they start to see those training cycles and they start to realize like, oh, this makes a lot more sense. And the big overarching kind of umbrella of it all is helping them realize this is how you really help yourself improve, because that's what you really want. Although your eating disorder has taken control and made you think you need to do things a certain way for specific reasons, you want your performance to improve. This is how that actually happens. And then they start to build that more authentic relationship with how they train, which is, I want to improve my performance, not I want to look a certain way, or I want people to think certain things about me, those types of things that can get in and kind of skew up the approach a little bit.
So a lot of it is really... So in the mental health space, we talk about negative coping mechanisms and then positive coping mechanisms. So it's building in the positive way of doing things, making it so that there's not as much control. Maybe they're a little bit more flexible, but understanding that recovery is actually as important, potentially more important than just like training. And you can have a good relationship with food. You can have a good relationship with exercising and working out and being a part of the team and the sport. And it doesn't necessarily have to be about control, right? You can have those controlling aspects, but what you're doing is teaching them how to maybe release some of that control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of times that control comes from a perfectionist mindset, right? They want everything to be perfect all the time. And we know that that's just not how things go. And that's not how life happens. And we were even talking about that before we started the show. Like it's just not about perfection, right? It's about being authentic and helping them understand that. And that's a lot more on the clinical side too. They work a lot with breaking those habits of perfectionism. And a good example is I'll work with some of the athletes after they leave their program as well in more of an outpatient setting. And sometimes I'll continue to work with their outpatient team and stuff. And then they'll get discharged from that. And I'll continue to work with them just on a personal level after the fact. And I've seen athletes who are very highly perfectionistic when they first come in, and they are like, everything needs to be exactly like, if something changes in my schedule, like, that's not good. Like, oh no, type of thing. I've seen athletes that I still work with to this day who will put notes into their training session, because some of them I work with remotely, put notes in their training session like, oh, I changed this because I was feeling a little pinch here, so I did an alternate exercise, and they'll just start to make those adjustments on their own where that never ever would have happened before. It would have been like, if this is the exercise that's on here, this is what I have to do, and I have to do it as hard as I possibly can, no matter what, even if I feel like my leg is breaking, right? So those things are really cool to see, and you start to understand that these individuals are starting to really improve that healthy relationship with exercise and understanding that it's not always perfect. Things change, and you just have to listen to your body and what it's telling you. So,
yeah. So we're going to go to one more quick sponsored break, but when we get back, I want to just chat about like why you got into this and talk a little bit more about your story. So we'll be right back after this quick sponsored break.
It's time to make mental health matter. BCC bridges the gap by educating people to support those who are facing a mental health challenge. We aim to ACE, increase awareness, cultivate conversation, and provide education to empower people and get educated and speak out about mental health and suicide so that we break down the stigma and start saving lives. Let's stop the stigma and normalize the conversation about mental health and suicide through educational classes and community events to reach 1 million people by 2030. And you can help. Go to bccevolution.org. Stay connected. Be a part of our community. Go to bccevolution.org now or email us support@bccevolution.org and make mental health matter.
What if you could transform your mental health journey with just one question? Have you ever wondered what it would be like to prioritize your mental well-being like never before? Well, now's your chance. Introducing Make Mental Health Matter, the show that's changing the conversation about mental wellness. Join us every Monday on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time as we delve into insightful discussions, expert advice, and inspiring stories. Hosted by Kelly Melissa Reinhart, a warrior for mental health, this show is your guide to breaking down the stigma surrounding mental health and discovering valuable resources to enhance your well-being. So, are you ready to take charge of your mental health journey? Tune in and let's make mental health matter together.
Edesia is a U.S. nonprofit dedicated to the dream of ending childhood malnutrition for millions of children around the world. Through the manufacture of Plumpy Nut and other nutrient-rich, peanut-based, ready-to-use foods, Edesia has already delivered life and hope to nearly 1 million children in over 26 developing countries. To find out how you can join Edesia's dream of ending childhood malnutrition, please visit edesiaglobal.org.
Calling all authors! Have you been considering an audiobook? Well, look no further. Come take advantage of Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's unique in-house audiobook production, which includes benefits and bonuses from our radio station. Let our knowledgeable staff guide you to create the audiobook you've always dreamed of without breaking the bank. Check out our full one-stop service from A to Z, including the ACX process. Schedule a free consultation by calling 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to dreamvision7radio.com.
It's time to make mental health matter. BCC bridges the gap by educating people to support those who are facing a mental health challenge. We aim to ACE, increase awareness, cultivate conversation, and provide education to empower people and get educated and speak out about mental health and suicide so that we break down the stigma and start saving lives. Let's stop the stigma and normalize the conversation about mental health and suicide through educational classes and community events to reach 1 million people by 2030. And you can help. Go to bccevolution.org. Stay connected. Be a part of our community. Go to bccevolution.org now or email us support@bccevolution.org and make mental health matter.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And like that, we're back. All right. So if you happen to be just joining, thank you for watching the Make Mental Health Matter show. Before the break, we were talking about just control and how eating disorders with athletes and what Brandon does specifically to help them get out of having to or needing to have that control, but also building in recovery, because recovery is important. And that's a conversation that I think is a really big part of this conversation, is the recovery piece, right? Recovery physically, but also recovery mentally. And when you're working hard, sometimes recovery and hope are the pieces that aren't talked about as much, other than with physical health. But when we talk about mental health, those are kind of the pieces that are lacking the most. So I love that you intertwine both physical and mental with the team that you work with and yourself and the youth that you work with. But I want to, because we have about 10 minutes, I want to talk about your story. Like, why did you specifically get into this? And give me a little bit. I know there's more story to it. So,
yeah. So when it comes down to me doing what I'm doing right now in terms of training young athletes, you know, that's something that really stemmed from my involvement in sports growing up. And then in college, I played basketball for a couple of years. And when I went on to finish my education, I wanted to find something that I felt like I would really enjoy and love doing. And I knew this was the type of stuff that I enjoy. And, you know, kind of bringing it back a little further, you know, one of the reasons why I kind of brought up, you know, potentially being on this show with you in the first place is in high school, my senior year, I lost a friend to a completed suicide. And, you know, I've told his story a lot, and I've gone around and talked at high schools and to kids. And I think that was part of what really instilled in me a desire to work with young people. I think just the impact that I know we're able to have through sports and being able to relate through sports, but also understanding that if kids are very intentional and active in how they treat their bodies and how they want to improve their performance, it might keep them out of other situations that, you know, might be a little bit harder to handle or cause them to put them into more difficult situations, essentially. And when I would talk about my friend's story, when I would talk at schools, I would talk a lot about the power in decision making and realizing that when we're in these growing, vulnerable times in our lives, a lot of times we think things are bigger than they are in the moment. And that causes us to make decisions that can impact the rest of our lives and impact the lives of those around us. So to briefly kind of go over his story, this was a really close friend of mine. There was a few of us that were really, really close. And at that time in high school, this was just a few months before we graduated. I had another friend who was living with me at the time, basically until graduation, and then he was going off into the military. And we were really close friends, and this buddy of ours would come over a lot. We hung out all the time, and we started to notice some odd things happening. Like, my friend who lived with me, he recently had a birthday and had received some money from his dad in a birthday card, some cash, and he noticed some of that cash missing. And we were like, what's going on? You know, like, that's really odd that's, and it was like a big amount of money. It wasn't like a couple dollars were missing. So we started to be like, well, the only thing we can think of is it might be so-and-so. Like, he's the only one who's here a lot, and we don't know why he would do something like that. And, but it might be him. So long story short, there was a day where we were at school and we said, hey, I guess there's another aspect to it outside of just the cash. That friend of mine who lived with me had a credit card from his grandparents that he was only supposed to use for gas. But they basically were like, here, you can use this to pay for gas while you're in high school and you don't have a job and stuff like that. Well, they started noticing additional charges on there that weren't him. And he was like, yeah, that wasn't me. So that was another thing that played into it. So one day at school, we were like, hey, listen, we're going to tell so-and-so that we're going to go to the outdoor basketball courts, which aren't necessarily close to my house, but we're just going to go play basketball after school. And he just kept asking us throughout the day, like, are you going? Are you going there? And we're like, yeah. And we're like, are you going to come? He's like, no, I got baseball practice. We're like, okay. But he just kept asking us over and over. So the plan was for me to go to the basketball courts in case he showed up there, but my friend to go back to the house in case he showed up at the house and was actually stealing from us. And long story short, he did end up going to the house, and he was preparing to take that credit card and go use it before his baseball practice, I guess. And my friend caught him, you know, in the act, and obviously we were all pretty upset about it. And he left, and he had said some things that day to his then girlfriend, you know, that he was like gonna take his life, and he was like really, you know, bent out of shape. We all were bent out of shape about it, right? But my friend and I, my friend who lived with me, were very adamant about like, let's just get together and talk, because we're like, why would you think that you need to do this? We're close enough friends that you could have asked us. We would have been like, you need money? Like, okay, cool. Like, let's figure out how to take care of you, type of a thing. And unfortunately, we were never able to have that conversation with him, but it really shined a lot of light on, you know, how things can be going on in people's lives that you don't really understand or know about. And, you know, to be in a situation so closely related to what would then be, you know, the end of his life, you know, was really hard and difficult for a long time. And you start to ask a lot of questions, and you start to try to think about, you know, what could have been done differently to help, you know, avoid this type of a situation. And as much as you can beat yourself up, I mean, at the end of the day, you just have to take the approach of, you know, how can we help other people not experience this, or people who are, you know, in a difficult situation who think that there's no other options, understanding that there are other options. I mean, again, when it comes back to what I was saying about decision making, this is something that a day or two from then we could have sorted completely out, and to this day our kids could be playing together, right? So, you know, that's you know, yeah, it's tough. It's hard, as you know. It's hard for the people who are still here, who kind of pick up the pieces afterwards. And you know, if there's anything, you know, that we can do, I think we are always like, okay, what is it? So I think that could have played a big part in my passion for trying to work with young people and to be there for them, to not be, to be a coach. I know, you know, for me, those types of people were always people I looked up to growing up, or my coaches. When you have good coaches, sometimes you get bad coaches, which is unfortunate, but to be that good coach for kids, someone that they feel like they can talk to. And if they're going through a tough time, they can bring it to you, because they may not easily bring it to their parents or something like that. So yeah, it's a story that'll stick with me forever and continue to drive me to try to help those that I can before anything like that ever happens.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I know oftentimes what I train and teach people is that it can take one trusted person in a youth's life to be able to change their whole trajectory. And you playing a role in that now with what you do, and understanding that, I mean, we can't change situations, but we've also talked about it is, it's really, really real for youth, right? Like those moments, like that moment for your friend was really real, and he probably felt really bad and didn't know any other, or didn't think of any other way out of that current situation. And unfortunately, he chose to take his life, and there were probably a lot more factors in there, but you didn't get the chance to have that conversation. And being able to share his story, and now what you're doing to be that trusted adult for other youth, because being able to have somebody they can confide in and not be judged and have those real conversations with is really important. So I definitely think that what you are doing is incredible, and having this space to be able to, whether it's an eating disorder or it's just athletic challenges that come up, whatever you can help with, and then sharing your friend's story. And it's such a good conversation that we need to have. So I am honored that you wanted to come on the show. Any final words that you want to share with everyone?
No, not that I can think of. I'm really happy to be here, and I'm glad I was able to share those stories and the work that we're doing now. And you know, we're continuing to grow as a business, and love, you know, anyone who wants to trust us with their kids. You know, we're very passionate about helping these kids improve. So yeah, I appreciate it.
And where can everybody find you if they want to?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram, coach_BrandonKress. Our website is somapf.com. There it is. And yeah, you can get a hold of us through those different aspects. But yeah, I would obviously love to talk to anyone who might be interested or looking. And as I mentioned, we always offer complimentary assessments and consulting sessions for people. So yeah, no real risk there if you're looking to see what it's all about.
Amazing. So there's a QR code over here and the website down there. So either one works. But thank you, Brandon, so much for coming on and sharing your story, what you do, and just having this conversation that probably not a lot of people like to have. So thank you so much for being here.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
All right, y'all, that was another amazing episode of Make Mental Health Matter. Again, I bring guests on who are either advocates for mental health, professionals, and or those that have a story. And if you heard me at the beginning, most of the time we have a story and what leads us into what we do today. And that's really the whole point. The whole point of this is giving you information, resources that maybe you didn't know about before, and having the hard conversations that maybe we don't want to have, but are important to have. So just like Brandon said, if you need any help, they do virtual and in person. So if you happen to be in Colorado, you can always search him out and physically go utilize his services, and or virtually. So either way, but whatever you do, make sure you come back next week because I have another amazing guest for Make Mental Health Matter, and I'll see you then. Bye, y'all.
Thank you for joining today for the Make Mental Health Matter show. We hope you found today's episode insightful and empowering. Remember, your mental health journey doesn't end here. For more resources, support, and information, visit us online at makementalhealthmatter.org and come back every Monday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Dream Vision 7 Radio. You won't forget to subscribe to our show or follow us on social media to stay connected and continue the conversation, will you? That's right. Together, let's make mental health matter. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.